on 1116 SEN, the ultimate rap with Tony Shebeki.
We need to explain. Tony means well when he throws out all those, you know, little name tags and says, you know, it's the ultimate rap with Tony Shebeki. Quite simply, it's George Denikin standing in for Tony Shebeki, who is stuck in Phillip Island. He's got a few commitments. And I've needed the assistance of a champion, so I've gone to Troy Zantuck. Good morning, sir.
Very good morning to you, the great man, George Denikin, and really looking forward to talking footy today, mate, with BA.
BA knows his stuff. He's the man from SEN's Inside Football, and he will be here in just a moment. But we've got a terrific hour. I hope you can stay with us. I want Brett to make actually some sense of what happened Thursday and again yesterday in the AFL. And do you think he might give us an insight into what might happen today?
Yeah, some interesting games on, George. The Pies take on the Brisbane Lions. The Blues.
Yep.
My boys. They take on the Kangas. Yep. And the game of the round, West Coast the GWS Giants. The Flat Track Bullies take on the Premiership favourites. So it'll be a great game.
Love your work. You're so subtle, Mr. Zantuck. Speaking of subtle, the round started so long ago, I've almost forgotten. Brett Anderson, can you remember when the round started?
Thursday night. Just wondering, George, the FA Cup final last night, George?
Yes, sir.
What did you think?
Can I just say, Arsene Wenger has won his 7th trophy in the FA Cup, 13th for Arsenal, but will it be enough to save his job?
I think it will save his job.
You reckon?
It's quite ironic that Arsenal have their best, their worst season in 25 years and still win trophies, and unfortunately Tottenham have their best in 50 and don't win anything. So.
Yeah, right, go easy, mate. Yeah, I knew all you Gunner fans would come out of the closet and give us heaps.
With that victory, they'll be refueling the Wenger bus.
Correct.
The Wenger bus in a second.
Now, Brett,
we've got to get rid of the owner first, but let's get on to the footy.
Mate, I want to know just how spectacular was that win by Geelong, and was there any controversy in it, mate?
Oh, plenty of controversy. they got one of the all-time charmed runs on Thursday night.
And a free kick to boot.
From the umpires, Robbie Gray is still waiting to lay charges on Jim Hughes for mugging him for the entire night without being able to get a free kick. But look, they in the end, Geelong found a way to win the game, ultimately. And the Port were probably very stiff, and I think they probably take more out of it than what the Cats did.
But social media still has not forgiven them.
But Chad Wingard wasn't playing, who's a massive, obviously, factor for Port Adelaide. And the Cats, again, were fuelled by their two champions, and I guess that's the thing. You look at Selwood and Dangerfield, and when they're held or they're not at their absolute brilliant best, the Cats find it very hard to win. But both of them stepped up late again, and that's why they are the champions that they are. And look, Geelong, as I mentioned, they just keep finding ways to get across the line, and it's not pretty, and they're not convincing at any stages. But when you've got two players in your team like that, well, it's going to probably take you a long, long way in what is a very even season.
Brett, just on Port Adelaide, I thought it was a meritorious performance and a barometer. When they're up and about, Jared Polak, he's the man, and I thought he played a terrific game on Thursday night.
Absolutely, Zanners. He's been the man for a couple of years, probably since he moved back to Port, that he's been the absolute barometer for Port. Whenever he's played well, Port's been up and about. And again, the other night, I thought he was really, really good. His form this year has been really strong and probably coincides with the way that Port Adelaide's going themselves. So they've got some real positives to take out of that that defeat. I know that you don't want meritorious defeats and losses where you sit there and think, you know what, though, that was really good, but we didn't get the points. I think Port can move on past that now and really start holding themselves to account. But with the decision on Charlie Dixon at the time, I think we all thought it was a little bit tough, but when you time it out, they might have got it 100% right. Quite funny watching some games yesterday. I'm really interested in who starts the time clock at each ground, the countdown timer, whether that's an AFL control thing. I haven't been able to get an answer on that one, but it seemed like the time clock that started on the Dixon one pretty much as the ball hit his hands. And I said at Etihad Stadium yesterday when Torrey Dixon had a shot, and the time clock didn't seem to start till about 4 seconds, 5 seconds after he took the mark. So it's an interesting one, that one.
You're just adding more fuel to the fire.
Well, it's a strange one. I don't know who runs it because I don't think timekeepers do. So that might be one that needs to keep an eye on at each ground over the next sort of couple of weeks.
Well, if anybody at SEN can get to it, you will, my friend.
What about a left field idea here, Brett? An audible buzzer.
More sound effects.
No excuses.
Oh, yeah. Got it. Where are you, Scotty, when I need you? Yeah, go on.
It's quite funny because I think we looked at... Went back and had a look at Ben Brown last week in the last quarter for North Melbourne. Yeah. And obviously, Ben's got a massive run-up. And he started his run-up in the final 2 minutes last week. I think he took a mark just on 50 or outside 50. He started his run-up after 29.4 seconds, having timed it. And his run-up went for 12 and a half seconds till he actually kicked the ball.
He's had three Gatorades before he gets to kick the ball.
So there are ways around it. And if you're really smart, Ben Brown is smart, there are ways around it. He gets back and then he starts his run-up. You can go back as far as you want as long as you start your run-up within 30 seconds. Charlie didn't do that the other night, and I think the umpire's got it spot on.
Yeah. Brett, let's move up to another side that seems to be able to do it when they absolutely must. I'm talking about Hawthorn beating Sydney by just a goal, effectively.
Yeah, it was. Jared Ruffhead's late goal, and I guess Dan Hannabury, I don't know what he was thinking there, because Ruffhead took the mark right on the 50-metre arc, and when you have a look at the shot, Ruffhead actually kicks the ball from the 50-metre mark. Hannabury dropped back 5 metres on the mark and gave Ruffy that little bit of extra room that he needed to get the distance on that long-distance shot. But how good were the Hawks? Like, they just keep finding ways, and ultimately it's their leaders and their veteran players that lead them across the line. I thought Sean Burgoyne the other night was outstanding. But then on the flip side, Ryan Burton, how well is he going? He was fantastic again, and he had to be right up in the conversation for the rising star. I think him, Andy McGrath, and also Caleb Marchbank are the three clear-cut ones at the very top there. But that was a good win for Hawthorn. But for Sydney, that is a terrible loss at home. They've now lost quite a few of their home games this year. They did it with Buddy Franklin playing nearly at his best. Like, he was amazing the other night, Buddy, against Josh Gibson, and played with a bit of fire in the belly. But that now leaves the Swans, with three wins? Three wins, seven losses. It's going to be really tough for them to try and get back. We all thought they were the one who might make the charge. That really, I guess, throws a cat amongst the pigeons in that regard, because that was pretty ordinary the other night. But full credit to Hawthorn.
You're touching on the sublime skills of Burgoyne. That goal he kicked from the pocket under immense pressure. That was a catalyst for Hawthorn getting back into the game. And as you said, those five goals from Franklin, just another highlight reel for Buddy. The cream rises to the top, Brett.
Yeah, I tell you what, when you have a look at all the Indigenous boys over the weekends and so far, there hasn't been too many that haven't had really good outings. And Jeffy Garland again yesterday had 11 shots on goal for the Demons. But Sean Burgoyne, there's not too many big moment and big play players in the competition over the last sort of 25 years than Sean Burgoyne. Continually stands up. I think he did it in Sydney maybe 2 or 3 years ago with a late goal from 50 on the run. He just finds a way to step up time and time again. And when they need someone to put their head over it or do something amazing, Sean Burgoyne's typically the one that does it.
Mate, he's done it from the very beginning of his career. I remember his first game for Port Adelaide. And I thought, hello, they've found themselves a champion. And he's just continued that career. He's just got better and smarter. And his move across the border to Melbourne or to play for Hawthorn he's just given him another platform. He is remarkable. And again, when you have an Indigenous round like this one, he stepped up and delivered a terrific goal at a crucial time. And I suppose has just helped them edge ahead. And Clarko, again, what do you say? Masterful coach, eh?
Absolutely. He orchestrated a way to play the game on their terms.
Yeah.
I think that's the key that with Hawthorn, we've seen in their wins and maybe even their close loss too to Collingwood, where for the first half they really controlled the footy. And that's the key. If you're going to beat Hawthorn, we've got to stop them doing what they really want to do, and that's being able to control the tempo, uncontested marks. Sydney really had a lack of pressure, I thought, the other night around the footy compared to what they've had in recent weeks. And you can't let Hawthorn do that because, yes, they're missing a lot of players and they're not what they once were, but they've still got some real quality there. And once they're playing well, I think it just lifts the confidence of the rest of the players around them, and they rise up to that occasion too. And I thought they were really well coached the other night. Clarko had a super night in the box, and I thought Burgoyne's performance was the best one by a player in number 67, probably in the history of the game, until Jeffy Garlett last night.
there you go. He set it up there on the board for everyone to read. Yeah, good on you, mate. Well done. I'm just going to say, we talk about pressure. We talk about applying pressure in key games and holding your opposition at bay. What are we to make of St Kilda?
Oh, they were terrible yesterday. Probably the first quarter.
Second week in a row, though.
they really controlled the footy early. They had a lot of possession, but weren't getting much for it. They butchered some chances. Their ball use going inside 50 wasn't where it needed to be. They were relying on small players taking marks inside forward 50. Gresham started really well. Another Indigenous boy, actually, whose mum, I think, designed the Saints Indigenous jumper yesterday. So he started the game really well. But then the Bulldogs, after quarter time, really got a stranglehold on the game, and they were able to control the ball. And they probably just had a few more options. And when you've got Jake Stringer in the form that he was in yesterday, it was a one-man band there at times, but at least it was a consistent and reliable one-man band, where at the other end, securities didn't quite have that. Paddy McCartan was probably a bit stiff, I thought, a few times, where he could have got a few free kicks, and then he didn't get paid a mark that he took, and then he dropped a couple. It was just one of those nearly days for Paddy. But on the other side, like, you look at the Bulldogs, and that's just that midfield depth, and their ability to change roles, I think George and Zanners, was really important. You look at Lachie Hunter, he's been known as a ball winner at times, a player on the outside who really adds something in terms of linking between defence and attack. Yesterday, he went into the centre square and ran with Jack Stephen and kept Stephen to 17 possessions and basically no impact, yet he got a fair bit of the footy and was really important himself. So that versatility through midfield, I think, something that the Bulldogs have got that other teams really are still trying to find themselves. And I thought that was a really key reason yesterday. They were cleaner and they were just able to play more roles effectively than what St Kilda were.
I thought Jason Johannesson was also tremendous yesterday with his rebound. And that goal he kicked from outside 50, that just shows he's got an all-round game now. He's just exciting.
Beside being a whippet.
He absolutely thumped that one through, didn't he, too? He's a Norm Smith medalist. I don't think his game's gone from strength to strength over the last couple of years. And I guess when you perform in big games like he did, it gives you the extra confidence needed to then take that into the next home and away season and build on your form. And it's very hard to miss him out there, isn't it, boys, with that that Odell Beckham-style haircut.
Yes.
You see him flashing about. But
the flash was right, mate. The flash is right. I like
it. He had a lot of mates.
Just on haircuts, BA, the Buffon of probably the decade. How did you see young Tim English's debut?
I thought he was okay.
Yeah.
He's a player who's come from a fair way back a couple of years ago. I mentioned in the call that as an 18-year-old, he was eligible to be drafted if he had played one waffle game in the Colts. And he was going to school at Christchurch School in Claremont. Went down to Claremont before the last game of the year. A couple of scouts from clubs tried to get him down there to slide him in, and they found he was in the wrong zone. So instead of playing that last game and being draft eligible, where I reckon Collingwood would have had a very good chance of taking him as a rookie, he ends up having to come back for another year and going as a first-round pick. And I thought he held his own yesterday. Look, he's still a long way off body-wise, but what he is he's super clean at ground level. You won't see too many ruckmen who are better below their knees with the ball on the deck than what Tim is. And his marking is going to improve. Like, that was probably the knock on him last year at times, his contested marking and ability to use his body in the contest. But from what we've seen at VFL level so far this year, he's really improved that. It's just now taking some extra steps to AFL level. I think he's still 2 or 3 years away from being anywhere near his peak, but it was good to see him get a game yesterday, and he more than held his own. He was okay.
20 minutes after 9, you're listening to The Ultimate Wrap with Brett Anderson from SEN's Inside Football Team. George Danique in here standing in for Tony Shebeki, and masterfully guided by Troy Zantuck, who's been in the go zone, I suppose. Almost as big a zone as the one used by Melbourne to bring themselves into the game against the Gold Coast, who looked a little peaky.
14 goal last half there, B.
Whoa!
Melbourne yesterday, being a Melbourne supporter, that was as poor a first half as I've seen in many a year.
So were you sharpening up the skis, were you, mate?
No, if I wasn't having to cover it on TV, George, I would have turned it off. Pretty ordinary. Up until half time, just the skill errors and the mistakes, and I guess the defensive lapses were the real thing that... there was plenty of offensive running, as I would call it.
Yep.
Not much defensive running. And the defence got really, left open to dry, got hung out to dry a bit by the mids. But in the second half, something changed. I don't know what it was, but I'll tell you, the two players, and Garlett was good in the first half, but he was huge. But Nathan Jones' third quarter, that's the game that you want, and that's what you want out of a skipper. And he kicked two goals, and he was at the heart of everything that was going on for Melbourne. In that third quarter, brought them back into the game. And as I mentioned, Garlett, he had 11 shots on goal, I think, yesterday, guys, and 5 goals, 4. That was probably the best game of footy I've seen Jeff Garlett play. He played some ball terriers for the Blues. He played some Deltas. But yesterday, he did it when it was really required, when his team wasn't going great. And I think that's the sign of a player who's really maturing. He's got 25 goals, so far this year, and he's really flown under the radar a little bit. But Gold Coast, did they stop to a walk? I've never seen a team go from what they were in the first half, really enthusiastic, upbeat, winning the footy in close, really using it well going forward. Brandon Matera was kicking goals.
But when there's no defence, my friend, it's like training.
Yeah,
you can run and you can expand and you can handball and you can be as visionary as you like. But when that defence closed, as you say, so quickly in the second half or in the latter stages of the final quarter, my goodness, Gold Coast, you kept looking out going, where are they?
It was floodgate time, wasn't it, Brett?
No, I'll tell you what, the jumpers were a clash yesterday, the two.
Yes, Jones, yeah, they were.
The two dark blue. And
how did that happen?
Red. I think they must have swapped at half-time. One team came out. It was a polar opposite.
Good call, Brett. Like that. So they swapped jumpers. Okay, fair enough.
That was very strange, that game yesterday. And look, in the end, I think, thankfully, from Melbourne's point of view, they were able to find a bit of quality in terms of their ball use, especially going forward, and some players came into the game. But yeah, I guess it was a story of two halves in terms of the way both midfields went. Aaron Hall dominated the first half, then totally disappeared. And guys who were really quiet from the Melbourne point of view came into the game after half-time. So a strange one. Really hard to know what to take away from that one other than Melbourne went getting the 4 points. And Rodney Eade, I guess, left scratching his head wondering what he does. I think he said after the game he might have to make 6 or 7 changes next week. And so they did have some absolute passengers after half-time, but they did build a lead against what we think is a decent side, but we still don't know yet with Melbourne. It's really hard to judge.
What we do know is that Dreamtime at the G is special.
Oh, wow.
And last night the weather played its little part too, added a little bit of juice, as they say, in the contest. And amazingly, as Mr. Zantuck told me, it was never in doubt because they man up well, the Tigers against the Bombers. And we saw them run out winners, 81-66.
And I guess they had to do it the tough way too, because the Bombers got off to an amazing start.
Yeah.
They were on fire, really. Brendan Goddard was in everything. And I guess the way that he uses the footy, it was the one player that Richmond didn't want getting a lot of it. He was really good in that early part. Joe Danaher and Fantasia and all their players who have been in good form started the game really well. But the Tigers showed some real grit, and they got back into the game and they didn't panic. They found themselves in a spot where they found themselves in for the last couple of weeks and have somehow coughed it up. But last night they were, in the end, I think they'd learnt some lessons and finished the game much the stronger. And I think it's Tigers supporters be thinking that it was a great sigh of relief last night. And they were well deserving of their win in the end. They were the better team across the night after the slow start. But there were some outstanding performances on both sides. I thought Brandon Ellis played his best game that he's played in many a year. Been a bit of a critic of Brandon at times with his inability to win his own footy, but I thought last night he was really strong. Thought Trent Cotchin's last quarter especially was immense. I thought throughout the night he was good, but then he really came to the fore when it mattered. Alex Rance, again, had a really good night. And at the other end, I thought Michael Hurley had another outstanding night as well. And you look at Rance and Hurley, I think along with Robbie Tarrant, they're the three that you would say are leading the race right now for the All-Australian spot. I've seen a lot of Hurley live this year, and I just think that he's the standout for me at this stage, but the other two are going really well as well. So,
what about the bloke who may have deposited another 3 Brownlow votes, 30 possessions, 6 clearances, the game breaker himself, Dusty?
Yeah, Dusty. Well, it's a funny one because, look, I thought he was good last night, but he wasn't the best player on the ground. So when the votes went that way, I was a little bit surprised.
Yeah.
I thought that there was some...
Brett watches his TV from the side angle, and you don't get the same perspective.
And that's the hard thing is when you're watching from a different angle, and you have the bonus of being able to then go back and check things. But just watching on TV, I thought that maybe Ellis and Cotchin were slightly better than Dusty last night.
Yeah, the captain was good. Captain was real good.
He was really strong again, and certainly putting his hand up there for potentially some more Brownlow votes.
Tigers fans are back. Speaking of being back and in big form, the Crows, what sort of job did they do on Fremantle? Do you know, the last time I saw the Crows do this, young Schimmelbusch lost his job as the coach at North Melbourne.
Yes, when Dennis Pagan took over.
They absolutely
had their
trounced
pants
North.
Pulled down by
now,
the Crows.
And Adelaide have done a similar job to Fremantle. Is Ross Lyon a chance of... No?
I wouldn't have thought. I wouldn't have thought so. But,
mate, that's one-way traffic. 143-43.
His first 100-point loss seen his coaching career.
Yeah, it was, Zanners. And I'm still waiting for Fremantle to get to the ground. They turned up right now. They were, from flicking over, because I watched a fair bit of the Essendon Richmond game, but looking at the scores and then flicking over in the breaks, they were non-competitive, which is remarkable for a Ross Lyon coach team, but also for what we've seen over the last, I guess, month and a half, where they've really turned their season around. And I did pay attention, though, to a little tweet from Glenn Luff last night from Champion Data, which I think raises a very good point. It's when in doubt, look at percentage. Percentage doesn't lie.
Yep.
Going into last night, I think Fremantle might have had the lowest percentage of a team with six wins on the season at this stage of anyone in recent memory. And then last night, I think it's dropped down to 81% with six wins. So that's I think that tells you basically where Fremantle are at. Obviously, they've got across the line in a couple of close games there where they've been good enough when it's mattered. But last night, they were blown off the park by a team who rediscovered their best form and rediscovered a forward line who's got multi-facets in terms of being able to kick goals. And last night, it was Andy Otten, four goals as the leading goal kicker.
Brett Anderson is here from SEN's Inside Football and giving us an insight into some of the football round that has been played, and we've seen some terrific contests. It's now 28 minutes past nine on SEM with George Tanikian and Troy Zantuck. And I want to ask you, before we take a little break, we've got Brisbane playing Collingwood today. It's the SEN game, of course, at 1:10. I want to know a little about that that young boy who played at Casey last year, the Brisbane rookie, Oscar
McInerney.
Just give us a sense. Would they have him in the reserves yesterday, did they?
I haven't seen where Oscar's played this weekend, but he's someone who came from Montrose a few years ago, mature age ruckman, so late to come into the VFL system.
Yep.
But he was one who I think a lot of clubs had some real interest in, and he developed playing through the Casey reserves.
Yeah, he's got a lot of fans, and they want to know what's going on.
No, he was BOG yesterday in the reserves.
Was he?
BA.
Okay, yeah. So he's been going really well because they've been playing him a couple of different roles in the defield. They've been playing him in the ruck, but also a bit of key position stuff, and he's been playing all over the place. So really, I guess, honing his skills at the defield level. And they've got a couple of good young ruckmen up there, like Archie Smith, I think, is coming to the side today, and he's been playing some really good footy in the Neefle as well. So,
right.
You know what? It's quite funny, and Collingwood supporters might really hate this, but they probably know better than us. Brisbane's record against Collingwood at the G is really good, like really, really good.
Matchups.
It's a watch on this one today. Like, all everyone would expect Collingwood to go there and win the game comfortably. But
Mate, let's take a break. Let's take a break and come back and finish it off the last three games, okay?
No worries.
It's almost 9:30 on SEN. George Tanikian and Troy Zantuck with the infamous Brett Anderson giving us the lowdown on the inside footy.
On 11:16 SEN, the ultimate wrap with Tony Shebeki.
We've given Shebekstar the morning off. It's George Tanikian and Troy Zantuck. And again, we've gone to the Oracle, Brett Anderson from SEN's Inside Football, to give us to make sense of what's happened thus far and what's likely to happen this afternoon when SEN takes us to... is the game being played here or interstate?
MCG.
MCG. So the G again. It's the 1:10 game. It's Collingwood and Brisbane. And you were saying some things before I interrupted you. I apologise for that, Brett.
No, you're right, George.
What do you make? Is it going to be super tight because Brisbane match up well? Or do you think Collingwood can break the shackles and make their coach feel a little more comfortable in the chair?
I think Collingwood probably end up winning the game. But as I was saying before, George, I just reckon that anyone going there thinking it's going to be an easy win for the Pies, I think they're probably mistaken. The lines have really matched up well against them in the past, especially at the MCG. Their record's quite good there. And I think when they come down and play in front of their Melbourne supporters, the old Fitzroy supporters, at the MCG especially, it really adds a little bit to them and gives them a bit of a boost. And I'd expect the Lions to be really competitive today. And I certainly wouldn't be penciling in the 4 points right now for Collingwood. But having said that, yeah, I would expect them to win based on a bit of talent. I think it's going to be a really interesting contest at the MCG today, and one that I guess that Nathan Buckley and Collingwood can't afford to drop.
Carlton, my boys, taking on North Melbourne. Have we got a chance, mate?
Absolutely you do, George. Absolutely you do, because you're very well structured behind the footy, and I think that's been proven over the last couple of weeks is how hard the Blues are to score against. Yeah, the issue is at the other end in terms of being able to generate a score themselves. But teams are finding it really, really difficult to be able to break down Carlton's defensive structure. And if they can keep that up, North Melbourne will have their hands full trying to get through. And the thing is, though, you look at North and that forward line, you've got Jared Waite down there, you've got Ben Brown, who's in really good form. They've just got some marking targets, though, that I think are going to be really important. And with Sam Rowe being out of the side now and going down with his knee injury, it probably leaves them a little bit short on for a bit of quality and a bit of height down back for the Blues. So it'll be interesting to see how they restructure that.
I should let you know, mate, I've been doing a rain dance all night and all morning, and I'm trying to do what I can as a Blues fan to get Carlton in the right frame of mind to take on North Melbourne. So
you're looking for a bit of rain today?
Mate, I'm hail and thunder. It's showers, local hail and thunder is the forecast, and I've been dancing big time here.
There's a slight problem with that, George. You're playing at Etihad.
Right. Okay. Never thought about that. Whoops, it's like that golden moment in Get Smart. Never saw that coming.
Yeah. I tell you what, though, they had the roof open yesterday for Saints and the Bulldogs, and it got a little bit murky there.
Mate, it might stay open. It might get stuck open.
Yeah, mate, they might have to today. But no, I think Carlton certainly have got an opportunity. Look, I saw North last week, and they were really good. I think in the end, North wins the game today, but I certainly would be writing off Carlton in that contest.
The game that I'm looking forward to... Brett, is West Coast and the GWS Giants, obviously the West Coast Eagles, the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde of the AFL.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what though, GWS aren't far off either. Like, yeah, they're winning games and they're finding ways to win, but they haven't been overly impressive, I think, at times. And we saw that sort of against Richmond, that just for three quarters, they were terrible.
Mate, but my forecast, West Coast will win this.
Last quarter, yeah, I'm sort of not against that either. I think that after what happened last week with their performance, West Coast, where they've copped an absolute pasting from everyone. I think they're going to have a fair bit of pride about what they do. And the Eagles, and I think the Eagles have got a really good record against the Giants from memory. I'd have to go back and check it, but I don't think that the Giants have ever beaten West Coast.
There
they
nearly
did last year, and then Nick Natanui bobbed up and kicked that goal with about 10 seconds to go.
Yeah.
I reckon West Coast's record against GWS is nearly flawless. So I'm probably going to say that the Eagles are going to win this one as well. Especially with what GWS have got out. I think they've only got 27 fit players to pick from. A lot of quality out of that side. Still a lot of quality in it. But they are missing a few players. And just based on the heat that I reckon would have been over in the West this week and the Perth media on the Eagles and their performance, I'd expect them to bounce back today and have a really good win against a good GWS side who are missing some players.
You're a gentleman, mate. You've been listening to Brett Anderson's take on the football this weekend. It started on Thursday, believe it or not, and we've still got some games to play this afternoon. Brett Anderson from SEN's Inside Football joining us for the Ultimate Wrap. Thank you, Brett.
No worries, boys. Have a good Sunday.
Excellent. Thanks,